Now we take a look at the latest news on Wisconsin's voter ID law. In recordings collected by a voting rights group, DMV employees weren't giving correct information to people seeking an ID to vote. Since then, U.S. District Court Judge James Peterson ordered the state's Department of Transportation to be investigated by the Department of Justice.
Governor Scott Walker announced today that the State Department of Justice did find some concerns about the information DMV employees gave people trying to get an ID.
WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson has been covering the legal action around Wisconsin's voter ID law for some years now. He joins us now. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob.
Well, this is such a long, tangled story. It's hard to know where to start, but let's start with these recordings. What kinds of things came out about how people were being counseled about their voter ID availability?
Yeah, and I mean, the context behind these recordings is that if you go to the DMV now, there should be essentially a path for you to get an identification for voting. For most people, it'll be a driver's license, or if not a driver's license, a free state-issued ID. Or in some cases, you enter into this petition process if you don't have the documents you need to get that ID to say, look, this is in the works, and you can use that receipt you get for voting. And essentially, people were being told in these recordings that have now been given to the federal court and basically under a sworn deposition that they were being told that they didn't have what they needed or that they wouldn't get these receipts in time for Election Day, which is bad information.
Now, we're talking about, I think, a smaller percentage of people in Wisconsin. A lot of people have the ID already. They need to vote. A lot of people can get it fairly easily. They have the ID. But there are categories of people who it's not as straightforward as it might be.
Yeah. And the federal court system, especially the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, has said that, you know, by and large, this is going to be a law that most people don't have any trouble dealing with. But that doesn't lessen the importance of those people who are going to have trouble dealing with it. And so the state needs to have an approach for dealing with those specific issues. And the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has actually empowered Judge James Peterson to keep an eye on things. I mean, when they said they weren't going to take up an appeal on this, they essentially couched that by saying, Judge Peterson, you know, we authorize you to make sure that this ID process is moving forward, and Judge Peterson seems to have taken that advice.
So the states, or the courts, I'm sorry, have said, yes, voter ID, okay, we give it the thumbs up. If you make sure these people who are having trouble getting IDs can expedite it as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, and the process that the state has put in place here, I mean, you can see why potentially it's still a work in progress. They announced this rule on May 11th, on the eve of the voter ID trial that Judge James Peterson, over which he was presiding. So, you know, that went a long way towards Judge Peterson upholding the law, is that they had this new process in place. So on July 29th, Peterson upholds the law, says we need to make sure that this process is working. But then these reports come out that are showing that, you know, if these recordings are true, people are not being told the right information. Judge Peterson said on September 30th, I need you to investigate this. And that's when he ordered the investigation that we're going to get the results of today. And there's going to be arguments about that investigation in part next week.
Right. The judge is back in the game now ordering this investigation. Who's investigating who?
The Department of Justice, which is defending the law, is also ordered to investigate the Division of Motor Vehicles, the Department of Transportation, which is, you know, implementing the law right now. So the judge ordered DOJ to go investigate DOT.
Right.
And they were going to
ASAP.
Hear about it next week. ASAP, exactly. It was a quick turnaround.
Really, yeah.
Really, literally.
And, a week or so, yeah.
And so, you know, it's rare to hear a judge do that where there was no scheduled order coming from Judge Peterson. He read some stuff in the news. It troubled him. He ordered an investigation. And it sounds like the investigation may show that additional training is needed.
And the DOJ quoted the song and said, give me just a little more time.
Yeah, right.
Judge Peterson did not. He said, nope, Friday.
No, and we're going to have a hearing next week on this. And the, you know, while it may be a long shot, one Wisconsin institute, the liberal group that's leading this lawsuit, is going to use this opportunity to ask the court again, look, we need to throw out this whole law. This is kind of critical to the law. let's get rid of it. Although courts are pretty unlikely to do something like that, take a step like that so close to Election Day.
We'll get into that a little more coming up. But these, so we're looking at two hearings, two separate hearings coming up. The DOJ coming to Judge Peterson, right, with the report, and then one Wisconsin saying, or is this all going to be
so
lumped together?
It's all one hearing at this point.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, we won't even get into the other federal case, which is elsewhere, but this is all kind of coming to a head here. It's all based on this one Wisconsin Institute case. That's what gives Judge Peterson the power in this case, this investigation. And then he's ordering the investigation kind of on his own. And one Wisconsin Institute saying, hey, we think that, you know, this is a pretty good example that the law is not working.
We'll hear more from Sean Johnson, WPR Capital Bureau Chief, about voter ID in the state in just a few minutes. By the way, if you have directly experienced this, we'd be interested in hearing from you. Have you gone in to get voter ID in the last, say, few weeks, couple of months? I want to hear about your experience. If you work in the DMV, love to hear from you. What kind of training have you gotten? Are you getting? Maybe you're doing training online while you listen to us right now. We'll talk some more about a rush to do some more training. You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with WPR Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson about voter ID in Wisconsin. A judge ordered an investigation after DMV employees were recorded giving incorrect information to people trying to obtain IDs. Sean, I teased this just a bit earlier. In addition to this investigation, the court looking at this, the Department of Transportation is trying to train or, I guess, retrain or extra train people on a correct policy here?
Yeah. So earlier this week, the Department of Transportation was scheduled to go before a legislative committee to talk about its voter ID program. And given everything that's been in the news and the fact that it had already been ordered by a federal judge to be investigated, they made a point of saying that they were ordering retraining of all staff on how to deal with this law.
And you also mentioned, we talked a bit about the hearings coming up next week, looking at what the Department of Justice has found out. And Governor Walker actually teased that a little bit himself. He said, yeah, they did find a few irregularities. Mostly, it sounded like going good was his take on that.
We haven't seen the full report yet. So it sounded like, from his take, it could have to do with just employees needing more training. So we'll find out. I mean, one of the things that the judge, he wants sort of a rigorous investigation. If he doesn't like what he sees, he could ask the department or tell, he's a federal judge, mm-hmm. tell the Department of Justice to go back and do more. But he's essentially got two things before him next week. One is the court's going to talk about this investigation. And two is they're going to consider this motion by One Wisconsin Institute, which brought the lawsuit, which gave Judge Peterson jurisdiction over this issue, over this case. One Wisconsin Institute is going to ask the judge to either strike down the law or take some other, you know, more interim steps.
Right. They've been working to get the law stricken down in the courts for a while now. They'll retry to do that in this hearing next week. You talked to some experts on voter ID law in the courts. So what kind of things did they say?
Well, one thing they said, which is kind of a given on any election-related case this close to election. I mean, we are this close to election day. It's October. That a federal court is unlikely to step in and take a huge step to change the rules of the game this close to election day. And you actually saw this in Wisconsin a couple of years ago under different circumstances. In 2014, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals essentially instituted Wisconsin's voter ID law for the first time in years because it had been shelved for years. Seventh Circuit came in and said, no, this law is valid. The Supreme Court stepped in and stopped that from happening, likely because it happens so close to Election Day. We're even closer to Election Day now. So the possibility that a federal court would step in and say, never mind on voter ID, is kind of unlikely. That said, this judge has been empowered by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals to do what he needs to in terms of another part of the law. So it's very possible he could take some other steps to essentially tell the DMV what to do.
And this isn't just any old election day. This is the highest turnout election day that voter ID is going to be in place for here in Wisconsin. The state's elections agency has been working to make sure everything's in place. Does that does that higher stakes election make it even less likely that a judge might flip that at this stage in the game?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the fact that it's a higher stakes election makes the judge less likely to do that. I mean, the judge, you know, has to consider all those factors, but it is definitely the first huge test of voter ID. There are going to be a lot of people just by the numbers who are encountering this law for the first time. And, you know, most people will have what they need to vote, a driver's license, but there are going to be issues.
And that, I think, has probably got a lot of county clerks really worried at this point. If, especially Wisconsin's a close election in, say, the presidential race or the U.S. Senate race, and it's close enough that irregularities, people turned away because of voter ID, could sway it one way or another. This is something that could really get weird in the courts.
I think what Judge Peterson orders next week will be very closely watched by clerks, because some of the other alternatives that are being thrown out for him, for example, if he doesn't throw out the law, would be counting all non-ID provisional ballots. So somebody goes there, doesn't have an ID, clerks would, you know, under this order, under this scenario, which is not the law, just to be clear right now.
Right.
But I mean, the judge has a lot of latitude here, and it's the type of thing he could decide to order. You know, he could order the DMV to undertake more rigorous training efforts. He could order more rigorous outreach efforts. I mean, the state spent $250,000 on outreach. Doesn't get you a lot in terms of advertising. So, you know, there's quite a menu of options that are in front of him, all of which would probably be appealed, and we'd be talking about it more. But that'll be definitely closely watched by election workers on the ground.
And one more, again, hypothetical option. The judge could say, I'm ruling against voter ID in some way, but staying it because I don't want to change it to the election. So voter ID on for this election, after it's back off.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more drastic the step that the judge takes, not meaning to put a negative connotation there,
but that would be
the
drastic.
The bigger the step that he takes, the more likely you're going to see an appeal very quickly, you know, not only to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, but potentially right on up to Supreme Court. If it's more at the micro level, then maybe his ruling just stands.
Lots for you to report on, Sean. Thanks, as always.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
That was WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. He joined us to talk about the latest legal action around Wisconsin's voter ID law. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Well, now that fall is in full swing, you may have some leftover apples that you're wondering what to do with after your last apple picking trip. And this Food Friday, we've got a lot of ideas for you. And guess what? They're not all dessert.
And we want to hear what your favorite apple recipes are, too. Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us how you'll be cooking with apples this fall. Using sweet or savory cooking, maybe you have a spin on classics like apple crisp, apple pie. Call in at 800-642-1234.
Zung Lewis joins us now. She's the host of the YouTube cooking channel called Honeysuckle, and her recipes for cooking with apples are posted on the Central Time Facebook page. Zung, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, before we get going, can you tell us a little bit about how you got into cooking in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. I started cooking at a very young age. I used to watch PBS shows with my grandma, Martin Yan, Jacques Pepin, and then after our Saturday morning food watching, we would go into the kitchen and start experimenting. And from there, I just really developed my passion for cooking, and I love experimenting with new and different ingredients.
And you've got, you don't just cook with apples, but you had a surprising range of videos about cooking with apples. Is this a kind of a favorite ingredient of yours?
Yeah, I love cooking with apples. Like you said earlier, you don't have to just make desserts with it. You can also make savory. And during the fall, there's just so many apples here in California that, you know, it's really fun to just infuse it into recipes.
We can go a little nuts here in Wisconsin during apple season because there are apples falling off trees, but there actually are. They do grow on trees. And you go to the orchard and you come home with bushels full of apples, and it can be a little intimidating in a way. But where do you start?
You know, anything that's really inspiring, obviously apple cinnamon is one of my favorite combinations. So I usually like to make, like for breakfast, I could do oatmeal with apple cinnamon, but you can also do like overnight oats. But, you know, it's anything that really inspires me at the moment. I also love making apple with cheddar cheese. So I recently did a video with grilled cheese with Granny Smith apples, which is really nice. It has like that perfect balance between crunchy and salty and sweet. But yeah, really anything that, you know, it inspires me at the moment whenever I have some apples lying around.
So you put that apple on a cheese sandwich there, and you also take it the other way. You've got an apple pie with cheddar. This is a winner, obviously, here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about the apple? First of all, what kind of apples do you like in an apple pie that has cheddar along for the ride?
I always love baking with Granny Smith apples just because I love the tartness of it, and that's pretty traditional to bake with Granny Smith apples in pies. But here I recently found Honeycrisp apples that I really love too. It's kind of like a cross between a Granny Smith and a Fuji apple. It has that firmness of a Granny Smith, but like the tartness and sweetness. So I like to throw in Honeycrisp apples into the pies as well. So for the cheddar apple pie, a lot of times I would see cheddar slices, like cheddar cheese slices on the pie, but I decided to infuse it into the crust so that it's nice and flaky and you get a little bit of cheesiness in every bite. So that's kind of my favorite thing to do.
So if you've got that cheddar-infused apple pie, can you still, you know, top it the way I like to top my apple pie with ice cream or whipped cream, or does it taste different?
Oh, I love it with vanilla ice cream. We actually, when I filmed this recently at Taste Made, it was one of the fall apple features that's coming up. We had it for breakfast the next day, and I also had it with ice cream. And it was amazing.
We're talking to Zung Lewis. You can see her on the YouTube cooking channel, Honeysuckle, and we're cooking with apples right now. Zung, before we get back to some recipe ideas, tools are important to you. You've got some tools that you use and I think even created when it comes to cooking with apples.
Yes. So a long time ago, I did a video with Mr. Lewis. It's someone that I know, and he created this contraption that it's like a DIY apple press, which is really interesting. We had gone to the orchard nearby. It's called Gizditch, and they have like this cool apple press. And, you know, being the engineer that he is, he came back and created his own out of like wood planks, a bucket. And it's really neat. I have a video on my YouTube channel if anyone's interested in checking that out. But yeah.
One thing that I've been curious about, I mean, I like every fall at least once to make an apple cake. What do you think it takes to make sort of the essential fall apple cake?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I actually haven't made an apple cake before, but I imagine either pureeing it into the batter like an applesauce or just leaving it in chunks and doing kind of like an apple upside down cake would be really interesting too, kind of like a spinoff on a tart tatin but with cake. That would be really interesting.
Yeah,
you'll have to let
idea.
Me know how that goes.
I used to make an apple spice cake, and that's with applesauce, and when I was willing to put more labor into it, I made the applesauce out of apples. Now I would just use applesauce.
Oh, good for you.
And then in zucchini bread, and maybe you could do this with a cake, I had a recipe, and pumpkin bread too, where you dice up apple real fine and then stir it into the batter as the last step, and that makes it really, like a lot of the moisture really soaks into the bread. That might work with a cake, I don't know.
Those are interesting ideas. I've never done applesauce in the cake. I've always left it in chunks. I leave the peel on because I figure the peel is good for you. And when it bakes, you really can't taste the peel anyway.
But you feel the texture. I don't want that.
I don't mind the texture.
Yeah.
You and I differ there. But yeah, those are interesting ideas. And so another question is about spices. What do you think pairs well with apples? You know, cinnamon goes deliciously. Some of us are unfortunate enough that we cannot tolerate cinnamon, people like Rob.
Yeah.
What else do you think marries well with the flavor of apple?
I really like cloves, although if you're not really into like the strong spices, I'm not sure if that would work. But for apples, I always feel like, you know, like these fall spices really bring out the flavor. Let me think here. Another one I think would be really interesting is pairing it with herbs. Sometimes in California, I see them make apple with rosemary combination, and it's really interesting. Yeah.
You also had, we've got a bunch of your videos linked on the Central Time Facebook page. There's an apple salad, a fall recipe. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So the apple fall salad is really interesting. It's kind of my fruit and salad combination. We have a little bit of walnuts to bring in some nuts, dried cranberries, because salad with dried cranberries is so good. And then gorgonzola, crumbled gorgonzola, where it's salty and it pairs really well with the dried cranberries and the crunchiness of the apples. I also add in bacon and pear just to give it some extra crunch and that like savoriness, just to make it a really robust salad. But this was kind of a spinoff of, have you ever had a spinach salad with some apples on it before?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Yeah, so this was kind of my spinoff on that, and I just added some of my favorite salad ingredients to it.
What do you think for a dressing on that one?
I like it with balsamic vinaigrette, but you can also use poppy seed dressing or just some light dressing.
Well, you had me with the apple, bacon, and gorgonzola together there.
Yeah, that's such a great combo.
So it sounds like, I mean, we can do a lot of experimenting with apples. What other kind of combos have you played with, maybe for better or worse?
Some other combos. Let's see. I like apples and pecans. Like when you make I was just thinking when you mentioned the cake earlier, I thought, you know, sometimes making like an apple sticky cake with pecans might be interesting. I haven't actually tried that yet, but it just popped into my head. So that's something I might be experimenting with soon. But I haven't really had any bad experiences with apples.
Great.
In terms of cooking with it. Yeah.
They're a pretty agreeable ingredient. Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, it's pretty universal. You can't go wrong with it.
Well, you have a recipe for for caramel apple pie pops, which I thought, A, looked really cute, and B, like they wouldn't be too hard if you didn't feel up to the task of making, you know, a from-scratch pie. How do those come together?
So for that one, I wanted to create something fun for our audience. Obviously, my audience on YouTube love like cutesy stuff, and who doesn't love anything on a stick? So like cake pops are really popular, pie pops. So this is kind of a riff between pie pops and your traditional caramel apple sticks that won't break your teeth. I love caramel apples, so I just kind of infuse the two together. And it's really easy, actually. I just bought some pre-made pie dough, and you can obviously make your own. I have before, but just for the simplicity of the video, I use pre-made pie dough. And then I just made your traditional pie filling. So I used Granny Smith apples, cinnamon, a little lemon juice, some flour, mixed it all together. And then I used really cute apple cookie cutters that I got from Michael's, and then and just kind of put it all together, bake it off. At the end, I put a nice drizzle of caramel on top, and it was so delicious.
I watched the video for that one. It looks easy enough for me to do it, and it looks like a lot of fun. But the key is, I would say you have to get the apple-shaped cookie cutter to make it thematic.
Yes, I don't think you want to mess with that.
It really brings it all together, yeah.
I guess it could be sort of a Halloween scary shaped pot if it didn't work. Yeah, a circle. I think my kids would like this one. This one might be a good one for that. Well, Zhong, thank you so much for joining us and talking apples today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Zhong Lewis. She's the host of a YouTube cooking channel called Honeysuckle. And she talked to us there about cooking with apples. And you can find some of the recipes we talked about today on the Central Time Facebook page, WPR.org.
Right. We've got them on our WPR.org website and on the Facebook page. A lot of fun. These are videos. So you can watch her cooking these. They do come together. All the ones I watch, pretty easy. So this is something you definitely could try at home with those apples this weekend.